Hey guys, we're back, Smart Brand Marketing. This is a very special episode for me. And with me today, I have Jennifer and Jeffrey Gittimer, two experts in sales. And before I introduce them and get them on, just want to give a super short story. When I started in sales about 20 years ago, the first book that I had was The Little Red Book of Selling by Jeffrey. It was like the first contact I had with something sales related, and now I have Jeffrey on the call. Welcome, Jeffrey.
That's pretty serious.
I love that.
Yeah, it was the first one, you know, and I showed it to my manager at the time, and he said, "You haven't seen anything yet. Get the sales Bible." and I did. I grabbed it, and I was like, "You're right." You know, the sales Bible could have ate that little red book.
Actually, they're different types of books. The Sales Bible was my original book, and it is it's a little bit of everything. The Little Red Book of Selling is about why people buy. Yeah. And it's more of a concept book, but it has outsold the Sales Bible literally 5-1 over the years.
What's that cover? That was the first thing. Like, I had no idea what to buy. And I looked at all of the sales book at Barnes & Noble, I think. And this is the one that stuck out. I was like, I'm grabbing this one. I like this cover. I like how it feels.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was really good.
I wonder how many people who didn't read The Little Red Book of Selling as their first book actually remember what their first book was.
Yeah.
I only ask that because the Little Red Book is so memorable with the cover, like you're saying, you know?
It is. And, you know, people borrowed that book from me a lot. And it's one book I always got back because I was like, you know what? You got my red book.
Exactly.
It still sells today. I mean, it's one of the most popular sales books on Amazon.
Yep.
I believe it. Like, I'm just saying, you know, it's so surreal for me. You know, to just remember that, and now like, wow, I have the sales expert on the call, on my podcast. Like, who would have thought?
Here he is, live in person.
And you know, the reason I'm getting salespeople on the show in the first place now, because I had Mark Hunter on and a few other people, is I'm getting a lot of potential clients coming to me, and they want to sell things, mostly courses, without doing the selling. Like, they don't like selling, but yet they want to sell. And they think the online space is different just because it's online. And I'm like, no, it's not. What do you guys think about this whole weird scenario now where people hide behind, you know, laptops and they want to make money without selling things, without prospecting, without doing objection handling, like all of this important things that we do?
Yeah, they don't have a foundation. They just have an idea, and that most of them will take the idea from a trend that's already existing, like how to make more money on LinkedIn, or how to establish a YouTube channel, or how to create a tribe. you know, I sort of laugh at them. I have 29,000 LinkedIn connections. And every once in a while, I'll look at the feed to see who's saying what. And it's laughable. I mean, these people call themselves experts without any expertise.
But so I want to add to that. If you're creating a course and you expect to be able to go online and sell that course without actually selling, that's like getting a 10,000 square foot retail store in the middle of Manhattan, in the most high rent district, and thinking, well, I've opened up shop, so people are just gonna come. That doesn't happen. People have to know who you are. They have to like your brand. They have to like what you're about.
Or you have to be attractive.
Right, exactly. and not like attractive as in like good looking, which obviously helps, but I think what you're saying is you have to have some reason for people to want to connect with you online, some reason yeah. for people to want to learn more.
But for those of you listening, we actually are good looking. So be aware that having both helps.
Well, I'm just saying, like, if you think you're going to create the best course on the planet and then people are just going to come and you don't have to sell it, That's crazy town.
It is crazy town. How do you think people should go about building this foundation and especially overcoming this weird relationship with sales? Because I love selling, but you know, people have this weird like negative relationship with like, I don't want to sell. I don't want to look like a salesperson. I don't want to come up salesy. I'm like, well, you are selling things.
Well, there has to be an external component to the course. So there has to be a LinkedIn posting. There has to be a YouTube channel. There definitely has to be a Twitter channel. And you have to attract followers by using the SEO words in your writing to be able to attract more connections. And once you have that base, then you can start to promote the course. But people start to sell way before it's time.
Yeah, and also one of the things you have to do as the salesperson is get comfortable with it. So make two lists. Okay, take out a piece of paper, write down the things you hate about selling that like you don't want to ever do. And then write about the things, like think about the most helpful salesperson you've ever dealt with. And what made them the greatest salesperson on the planet? I'm sure you've come across one. So what are those things? And then be sure to focus on those things. So, you know, if you don't want to be known as a salesperson, that's okay. You can be known as a helper. You can be known as someone who wants to give value. You can be known as someone who has, you know, valuable content, but you're still selling. You just have to get comfortable with it. And it starts with your mindset first.
Yeah, I think that mindset part is the main issue. And I always tell people, like, if you don't like selling and you think selling is bad, there's no way in the world you're going to become successful.
Yeah, go get a job.
Yeah. Well, the problem with getting jobs, especially when I was trying to get a job before, because I'm unemployable now, before, the only jobs I could get was being a salesperson. That was the easiest job I could get.
Why are you unemployable now?
I like being on my own too much. I can't listen to people.
Right. So you're unemployable by your own decision?
Yes.
Not by your resume?
Oh, no. People would hire me in an instant, and they do. But I'm just, I'm stubborn. I can't. Not anymore. That's done. That's done. I tell myself.
So if you're unemployable, if you're out there in the internet land and you feel as though you're not going to be able to get the job that you want, then start your own business.
That's what I've done.
It's a free world. And if you can collect the expertise and you have the passion and the desire and you have the intestinal fortitude, you know, the guts to do it, the dare, the risk factor, then go for it.
So Tom, we have a podcast called Sell or Die. And one of the reasons we named it Sell or Die is exactly this concept of, you know, we love entrepreneurs. But entrepreneurs sometimes are really, really great at their craft. They're really great at whatever it is they're teaching.
Yep, and sales reluctant.
Right. They're really great at baking the cake. Whatever it is that they're selling, they're really great at doing. But then they forget that they need that whole sales component. And whether it's online or in person, it doesn't matter. You sell or you die.
Yeah, I agree. I've been saying that for a long time too. I just didn't say sell or die. I think I just said you either sell or go out of business. Like that's always
exactly,
my whole thing.
Exactly.
You die.
Yeah, pretty much. You know,
we're a little bit blunt about things around here.
Yeah, I like that. The one part of sales that I see to completely escape almost everyone, and it's sort of coming back a little bit, is prospecting. You know, people are forgetting how to prospect. You know, I've met a lot of salespeople that things just came easy to them, and businesses that, you know, started and initially referrals and things, they started coming in, but the skills of actually going out and finding people, I'm not seeing much of that at all. It's like it disappeared for a while.
Well, prospecting is hard work, and most people don't want to do the hard work that it takes to make selling easy. And when you think about prospecting, you can cold call, you can network, you can go online, you can try to attract. There's There's 100 ways to prospect right now that didn't exist in days gone by. But most salespeople don't want to prospect. They just want to have an easy time. They want people to come to them.
That's exactly what I'm seeing. And you're right, too. When I started out, I had to cold call door to door. I was one of those outside salespeople, right? And it took me 8 or 9 hours to hit 60 businesses, just walking around and speaking to them and, you know, trying to get the decision maker, which usually wasn't around. Now I can do the same thing within like an hour and a half. Easy, easy. So even though it's hard work, it's so much easier. Like I can duplicate this by 10x. You know, I just don't get it. I don't see why it's so hard to do the prospecting part. You know, because like you said, it makes the sale easy. You know, if you have 20 or 30 leads coming in, you can be super picky and choosy about who you work with.
Yeah, and here's the thing, like if you're creating an online course and you don't feel comfortable selling, hire someone who does. Hire someone who has that strength. You know, we feel comfortable selling, but we have a salesperson.
And we have a platform.
And right. And in addition to the attraction that Jeffrey's created through writing and that I'm creating through writing and other and videos and other such things online to get people to come to us, we have outbound prospecting where our salesperson is messaging people on LinkedIn all day long. You know, he's created his own number that he wants to hit all day. Every month he tweaks his script and he gets all excited, you know, and this is like not us telling him you have to do this. Da, da, da. This is him being excited and responsible for his sales. And so if you hate selling, even though you're going to have to sell, hire someone who can.
And who would hire someone who's self-starting and has a deep belief system in both himself or herself and the product.
Yep.
What you've mentioned is very interesting. You know, going on LinkedIn and hitting a certain number of people. What I'm seeing, people think they can just get on Facebook, pay for some ads, and just sit back and relax, and the sales will come in.
The problem with going online to any social service is that they change their rules and their algorithms weekly.
It's true.
If you think it worked last week, it may not work this week.
We're finding right now ads, for some reason around Christmas time, are very expensive. And I don't know when this is going to air, but you know, if you're just relying on ads, you're at the mercy of whatever season it is and whatever your competition decides to wake up and put in that day for those same keywords. And so you can't just like put an ad out. That's like putting an ad out in a newspaper again and expecting people to show up. It's never worked. It doesn't work. You have to do more than that.
You know, I would say there are probably 1,000 people right now selling the dream and saying that it does work.
Oh, yeah. Well, listen, that's okay for them. They're selling their version of the dream to other people who want to buy the dream. But they're not selling the actual course that they're recommending other people do. I would like everybody who's talking about LinkedIn as an expert to tell me they have 30,000 LinkedIn followers, but they don't. They'll say something like, I have 5,400 LinkedIn followers and so can you.
You have 30,000 LinkedIn connections.
Right.
You have way more than followers than that.
So I have connections and followers, and you have to have both.
Yeah, LinkedIn is something that I've sort of neglected for a while too. I thought it was dead like 4 or 5 years ago, but I opened my eyes again. I'm like, oh, wow. It's far from it. It's completely different now than before. And I think 30,000 connections, that's like the maximum now. They upped that from 5,000.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And everyone let you go past
Jeffrey,
that.
You have 57,000 followers.
Oh, I have 57,000 followers. Okay, so, but listen, here's the deal. You have to be able to create a message that other people want. It's not just a course. It's not just an online business or something you're selling online. You have to have valuable information, and that valuable information has to be not only found and used, but shared. And that's how your network grows.
So I want to go back for a second because you just struck a nerve with me for something that's like one of my big pet peeves, which is these so-called experts who have somehow become successful, who are now selling the dream, standing in front of their airplanes or standing in front of their Bentleys or Rolls and saying, you can get this too. That is like, if everyone could get this too, this would be a way different world.
Yeah.
Okay? They are literally selling air. They are selling a dream versus, you know, and you guys as listeners and the consumers have to be really careful with who you decide to follow, because, you know, are they going to give you real world actionable tips? Are they going to give you real world actionable strategies that you can implement right now to actually make more sales and make more money and maybe one day get that car of your dreams?
I'm going to throw it at you this way. Do what you love, not what they love. They're trying to sell you on what they love to do, and it may not be what you love to do, but you're going after it because they made money. I don't want it to be that way. I want you to be able to, you the listener, to be able to define what you love to do and do it in a way that you feel comfortable with it and you can believe it deeply, and then all of a sudden people will start to buy from you like a miracle.
Yeah, there's a story that we've been sort of talking about on this show, and that's, you know, when you first start a business, it's sort of like getting on a bus. And every level up that you do or every year that you pass, you can think of it as a bus stop. And what most people do is they get to the third stop and they think there's a sexier other bus riding around, and they get on another bus. They don't realize that they're getting on the first stop and second stop and third stop again. And usually they find another sexier thing, you know, in front of them and move. So in 30 yeah. years, instead of being on that bus for 30 years and hitting the 30th stop and sticking it out, they've been on 10 different buses and they only have 3 years of experience. They don't have 30 years. They have like 10 times three. Yeah.
I'll give you a metaphor you can use. Don't change buses. Stay on the same bus and then you can buy the bus.
Yeah.
I love that. And if you read Truthful Living with Napoleon Hill, which Jeffrey just annotated and edited, it's Napoleon Hill's first writings, actually predates Think and Grow Rich. He talks exactly about this, and he talks about staying with your expertise and finding your focus and concentrating on it. And it's I mean, when was it written, Jeffrey?
Yeah, it was written 100 years ago. So the information is there. People need to expose themselves to it. That's number one. And number two, you're not trying to get rich. You're trying to do what you love, and then you'll become wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with that. From your experience, what are some of the best ways that you guys found to sell the courses? Because I think you're probably doing real sales, which is super interesting. Not Facebook ads as much, maybe not YouTube and all these things where everyone's running to.
We use all of those methods, mm-hmm. but what we find is that the people who are already our customers, the people who are already our fans or connections or whatever, are going to be our best buyers. So we've developed that by staying on the bus. You know, we've stayed on the bus now for 20 years, and all of a sudden it works.
Yeah, all of a sudden it works, yeah.
Also, if people are going to trust you as a course creator and, you know, follow your methods, they need to know who you are. So a big part of that is you going live, is you having a podcast so they can get to know you, is you going on Facebook Live, creating, you know, interactions with and engagement with your community, creating that following, creating that tribe. But if they don't even know who you are, why are they going to be into your method of whatever it is you're teaching?
Yeah, it's true.
I think the cliche in today's world, or the buzzword in today's world, is the word tribe. And I have never been a great tribal member, other than because I'm Jewish, we always talk to each other as being members of the tribe, because 5,000 years ago, that's what they were. But the challenge that I want everyone to ask themselves is, if you're creating this course, first you have to ask yourself, who would be in your tribe? Who are the people that would literally become fans and people who could tell other people what you're doing, is it strong enough to do that? And if it is, you know, then you go out and find those evangelists, and those evangelists will help you grow. You don't need to grow all by yourself. There's all kinds of people that will join your tribe, the Seth Godin tribe or the Anthony Robbins tribe. There's tons of people in that tribe. And if you're trying to create some kind of an online business, ask yourself, who's going to be in my tribe? Would a known successful person join my tribe, or am I just trying to go out and get somebody else?
And once you create that foundation and that love from your audience, when they love you, they'll do anything for you to try and help you and help you be successful. I mean, they'll become loyal advocates, and that's what you want to create. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Jeffrey and I have a podcast, Sell or Die, where we go live 5 days a week. We have a Facebook group where we communicate with and engage with our community, and we call them diehards. And so our diehards are literally diehard listeners of the show, but they've become fans of both me and Jeffrey. And we ask them to help with our upcoming book promotions. And how many of them already have stepped up? We had them sign an agreement stating they'll do 5 or 6 things and what we would do for them if they did that. You know, we would send them a copy of the book. We would do a free webinar, whatever. And they're doing like 5 or 6 things to help us get the word out, purchasing the books, whatever. And these agreements keep rolling in. And it's amazing to see how many people who listen to the show and have become loyal advocates want to step in and help. And so if you're creating a course, you need to create those loyal advocates too, who are benefiting so much from the value that you're giving, benefiting so much from your knowledge and your expertise, that when you do ask for help in the rare occasion, they're ready to help and wanting to help.
Yeah, I could see that. And that's one of the benefits of staying on the bus. But I feel to quite a few listeners, there might be a disconnect now. They're thinking, well, you know, it's easy for them to say because they've been on the bus for 20 years. It's easy for them to say because they have a lot of money. They have a big budget. But what about me? I'm just starting out. This is my first course. How is this relating to what I'm doing?
I started my business bootstrapping it every step of the way. I've had no outside investment. I had no, you know, huge cash flow. I started it with, you know, a couple $1,000 I had in the bank and to hold me over to make sure I could pay my rent the next month. And that was it. Like, you know, yes, Jeffrey's been in the industry for a long time. And so, but he started with 0 followers too. Okay.
I know, it's not, I started with 1 follower.
It's your mom?
Yeah. But listen, here's the deal. It's so easy to do that people don't realize if they just get up and work hard, it happens. But they're not willing to get up early to work hard. They want to get up at 9 o'clock and have a cup of coffee at Starbucks and then wonder where the day went when it's 11.
Or they're focused on the wrong tasks. They're working 10-hour days and not working on the 10% of things, 10% of strategies that are going to move their business forward. They're working on the things that are easier to do and more easily checked off of a to-do list rather than focusing on revenue generation.
So how do you find that 10%?
You start to write things that attracts them. It ain't easy.
When you look at your to-do list, if you list everything out that you need to do and you look at it, you can determine, I mean, you're a smart person. Your listeners are smart, right? They know they've started a business. They're creating a course. If you look at your to-do list, you can identify the things that might be the harder things to do, but will push the business forward more. And you can also identify the things that you want to do more. And sometimes there's a huge disconnect, right? You want to do the things that are easy. You want to do the things that you can just check off. But oftentimes they're not the things to move your business forward. You just need to look at it and to make that determination.
Yeah, just seeing if you have a system.
Yeah, I just write it all out. And then I say, okay, I should do these five things because really they require me, and then I need to delegate these other things. And at first, if you're starting out, you know, you might need to hire a part-time assistant to delegate to a couple hours a week. There are things that you're doing that you shouldn't be doing that would be more cost-effective to have an outsider do.
Yeah, what I find is, you know, sometimes when I speak with people, I maybe take for granted that I have a team, that I have a bit of a following, you know, that I maybe have a bigger network and understand things a little better because I've been doing them for longer. And, you know, I always ask these basic questions because, you know, you'd be amazed how many times I'm just surprised. I'm like, oh, really? Like, I was just assuming that we all were on the same page. But, you know, it's definitely not the case.
I mean, there are definitely things as an entrepreneur you feel you have to do. But if you look at it this way, is this revenue generation or not? It will easily, and answer that question for each item on your to-do list, it will easily show you where you're spending your time and where you need to be spending your time.
Yeah, I agree with that. What do you think is different about selling online than selling in person on the phone, just from your experience? Because I'm looking at the course page now, and you guys have done a few things which I don't see done much. One of them is it's a membership site. You know, we found selling a one-time offer is usually easier. So, you know, you're definitely making it more difficult, but definitely better money too because it's recurring. And I see a lot of corporate sale type of messaging here, which is also great because you get, you know, probably more courses sold for at one time, but it's much harder to sell too.
Well, there's an argument about which makes more money, the one-time revenue or the recurring revenue. The recurring revenue is only going to make you more money if your stuff is good enough where people recur.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole issue for that. But the bottom line is that you have to create something that people want to buy, not something that you want to create. And there has to be an understanding of if they're willing to buy it, how much are they willing to pay for it? And you can't just create a course and think that's going to sell. You have to have a genuine expertise, and this is what most people lack, a past history of success. And that past is so, like, if you're the guy who does ClickFunnels, he's got a past history of success, and people are going to jump on his bandwagon because they want to be like him.
Russell Brunson.
Yeah, Russell Brunson. Or if you're the Brendon Burchards of the world, then you have a past history of success and you've been a number one New York Times bestseller, people will jump on your bandwagon. But if you're Joe Shit from Cleveland, nobody's and no one knows you, you have to build that success track record first, and you have to have patience and or money to be able to do it. And if you don't, then my recommendation would be, don't start without a foundation, or you're going to be very, very disappointed in the results.
Yeah, and to add to that, online, there are some things that you just have to do. You need testimonials on your sales page. People want proof that it works. Don't make these testimonials up. You can easily give the course away for free to a few people in the beginning and get testimonials from them.
Yeah, let me answer the question directly, though. The reason people will go online is because they can be anonymous and it seems simpler and they don't have to go face their world. On the phone is a hell of a lot more difficult, but it has proven itself to be successful over the last 100 years. And you may want to go with a strategy that includes both. Not just online, not just on the phone, but both. So you develop a social platform that has proof. You call people on the phone, you email people, you advertise for people, and the combination of that will bring you results. You can't only take one medium and think you're going to win with it.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going with it. It's a multi-pronged approach, and that's just it.
Because you don't know which prong is going to give you the money.
Right, and sometimes a person may need to hear it and see it and then see proof about it and then see it someplace else. You know, they may need to see it 6 to 8 times before they even want to learn more.
Yeah, I agree with all this. Sometimes I like to say that we are not selling to a team standing at attention, but it's a moving parade, right? So you have to keep screaming, you know, because different people will see you at different times. And with online courses especially, one of the best things that I found to do is just to stay in front of people for a long, long time. Like sometimes if you send out emails for a year and a half, the consistency.
Staying in front of them with a consistent value message,
yeah.
Not just staying in front of them.
Yeah, but just, you know, showing that consistency, right? Like most internet marketing people come and go, but if you're around saying the same message and delivering value for a year and a half, like you are already in the top 10%.
Exactly. Or you should be.
I think that's spot on with online courses. You know, you're in the top 10% in that field.
There's a reason. We've got a 20-year history of success. Where you know, people go, oh, Jeffrey Gittimer, he must know it. I've read his little red book. Have you read my little red book?
Yeah. I'm curious.
Have you read the sales Bible?
I'm curious what your favorite sales books are. Because, you know, I started with yours.
Okay. So my favorite sales book is in the 1939 book by Napoleon Hill called How to Sell Your Way Through Life. And you can get paperback versions of it that are reprints for 10 or 20 bucks. Go buy that book. That will give you more insight than I can. Well, equal amount of insight as I can.
What about you, Jennifer? What's your favorite one?
This is terrible. I'm blanking on the name. It's that book, that old book that you gave me to read.
Oh, the
by
the,
Fuller.
Napoleon Hill.
No,
oh.
The Fuller guy.
Oh, Your Foot in the Door.
No, it was a different book.
What are you talking about? All right, well, there it goes.
It's an amazing book. Hold on, I'm going to go get it. I'll be right back.
Okay. My other favorite books are anything by a guy named Elmer Letterman, E-L-M-E-R.
That's it, by him.
L-E-T-E-R-M-A-N.
Okay.
One of his books is called The Sale Begins When the Customer Says No.
Perfect. Yeah, I'm just super curious what you like to read. But I thought it would be some older stuff because, you know, these new books.
It's all older stuff. There's nothing new that I'm going to buy. It's going to change my mind about the way I sell or the way I do it. I am friends with Jeb Blunt.
Yes.
And, you know, he wrote a book on objections. He wrote a book on prospecting. He wrote a book called Sales EQ. He's a writer, a thinker. And he's probably as good a guy as out there right now. His buddy, Anthony Ian Areno, also a good guy. And we're going to be speaking together with Jen on his a seminar called Outbound in Atlanta in April, I think it is. So if you go to go online and search Outbound and you can be in Atlanta, it would be well worth your money.
Outbound. Interesting. Okay. I'll take a look.
But these are people that go out and make sales every day. It's not about an online course. It's about going out and beating the drum of your product and doing it in front of people that can say yes to you.
You know, since you mentioned that, people going out and doing sales every day, you know, when I worked at some of these big companies, the trainers, the sales managers, they came on the road with me sometimes. You know, and these were the guys, you know, pushing their scripts onto me. And I told them, go sell with that script, you know, especially, you know, someone coming from some little cozy office in Connecticut. And I'm like, you know, come to Brooklyn with me and use this script. And they would just get doors like shoved right in their faces. And people are like, what, are you kidding me? And, you know, it's sort of funny, right? How a lot of the people training sales, they don't know how to sell.
I don't disagree with you. They have a concept and that concept is old world.
So you notice that in person way more when they're training sales and they don't know how to sell. But that same thing is what I was talking about too before. It's like, you know, some guys created a successful business and now they're or girl and now they're rolling around in these fancy things, cars, planes, whatever. And as if they can transfer that message on how to sell too, but they don't always know how to do it.
Or they did it a different way, or they started out, you know, they made a big bundle by starting out with a small bundle. you don't ever know what the history or the foundation of the guru is. I've tried to be as transparent as I possibly can. My little gold book of Yes Attitude sort of tells my story of growth and of how I attained a positive attitude and how I kept it. And I create lessons in there about how you can keep it and you can transfer it. So it's a strategy or a philosophy that most people are not willing to reveal. It is known in government today as transparency. But the challenge is that most people only want to tell about their success, and they're not willing to share how many failures it took to get to the success. I failed plenty of times. How about you?
I fail all the time. Like, I just tell people to fail fast. That's it. Fail fast. See if you can learn anything from it and just move on as quickly as possible. Just don't look back.
Yeah, but the challenge is most people don't want to fail.
They're scared to fail.
Yeah, I have nothing to say to those people. Just like I can't, there are a few things which I just don't understand. Like, I don't understand people getting medals from coming in the last place and the first place. You know, there's a reason why there's a first place and a second place and a third place. You know, I think we're getting too soft as a nation. You know, that's one of these things that I feel personally, like we're getting too soft. And especially me, you know, growing up in Eastern Europe, like when I was very little, some of the things I've seen, I'm like, you guys are just so soft over here now. Like, you don't understand. Like, when I went to it, look, Jeffrey.
Here's the deal about that. People who live in Eastern Europe, and I have had a lot of experience in Eastern Europe starting in the early 90s when I spoke in Poland, I spoke in the Czech Republic, and I spoke in Hungary. And these people were so damn happy just to be free that they were enthusiastic and put in what I would consider a better work ethic than we have. You've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it. But it's just small things. Like, you know, when I went to a dentist when I was little, we didn't have any anesthesia, right? So when I had things done, it was just getting it done. Like, I felt every bit of it, you know? Can you imagine in the States now there'd be lawsuits everywhere?
That's very true. There would be lawsuits everywhere.
You know, if I said something in class which didn't really match what the teacher liked, she would take me up to the blackboard, take a ruler, and just beat the hell out of me, right? In front of everyone. Can you imagine that in the U.S., right? And I'm not saying we should be like that, but it's like sometimes I'm like, come on, guys. You know, this outrage and you know, you don't want to fail. And your feelings are hurt because someone said no. I mean, you know, especially with selling, it's like, come on, you're going to hear no 1,000 times. Like, it's just going to happen.
I agree. And it's going to happen frequently.
And I think it's a part of it. How do you deal with rejection?
If you think of no as instead of like a negative thing, but it actually stands for N-O, next opportunity, and put it in a positive light, like they said no, so now I'm on to my next opportunity. You win. Okay, but if you think no, like, oh my God, they said no, it's so hurtful. How could they say no to me? They're not saying no to you. Don't take it personally. They're saying no to your product, and that's okay. You know, and as long as you can be okay with it, and it's all back to that mindset thing, like don't hold it over your mind and get offended that someone said no. Just move on and go to the next one, and then you win.
Yeah, this has been great. I am valuing your time, so I really appreciate you guys coming on, both Jeffrey and Jennifer. And where can people find you?
Just go to Gittimer.com or salesinnewyorkminute.com, and you can find anything. If you want our books, just go to Amazon.com.
And that's it. Jeffrey said it.
That is exactly it.
And in case you were wondering the title that I couldn't think of before, it's a book by Elmer Lennerman called Personal Power Through Creative Selling. And it's amazing.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Before you go, let me know if you enjoyed this interview. Leave a review, subscribe, join the Smart Brand Marketing Facebook page, whatever is easiest. Also, if you need my help marketing your online course, or know that your business could use some SEO, come to smartbrandmarketing.com, check out the case studies, and reach out to me. Once again, smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.